Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Amish Devatia, CEO and co-founder of Baffle. Welcome, Amish.
Thank you, Matt. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you on. And what I always like to do at the beginning of a conversation is to let my guests provide a little bit more of an introduction as to who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Sure. So again, Amish Devatia, CEO and co-founder at Baffle. 20 years as an entrepreneur, worked as a developer 10 years prior to that. I've done four different startups. This is the fourth one. And all of them essentially participated in multiple large markets being created in the data center infrastructure space. Two of them were acquired by Cisco, another one acquired by Broadcom.
Currently at Baffle, are you kind of mostly focused on privacy?
Yes. So let me give you sort of the genesis of how things came about. So this was actually a summer of 2015. The OPM hack was all the news, if you remember that. This is the Office of Personnel Management, part of the Department of Homeland Security. And the government lost very, very personal information of U.S. citizens with security clearance. So that was sort of a shocker. We all have friends, relatives who have gone through the process. And, you know, it felt like this was really close to our hearts. So I was talking to a friend in the venture capital business, and he actually was very intrigued by this capability called privacy enhanced computation, or private computation is what it used to be called at that point. And then he brought me into conversation with a cloud computing pioneer who was at Amazon very, very early on. And his biggest paranoia was being subpoenaed if they lost their customers' data. Long story short, both of them became seed investors in Baffle, and we started the company. And that was how this whole thing came about.
So you just mentioned privacy-enhanced computing. Could you explain what that is?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest challenges that we have in a data-driven economy is data is going to get collected no matter what. And once the data is collected, it is going to be analyzed for business purposes. There is no way to prevent that. So there is this field of innovation, if you want to call it, or a technology where you can still perform computations on data that is collected without compromising privacy. To get into a little bit of the technology, it's essentially encrypting the data, which means that it cannot be retraced back without a key, but doing computations on that encrypted data so that the utility of the data is still maintained. You can still get analytics results out of that data, but never see it in the clear.
So kind of breaking it down, and hopefully I'm doing this correctly from a lay perspective, it's, as you said, allowing for all the computation analytics, but all of those processes are happening behind the encryption screen?
That's correct. It is essentially, in our particular case, the way we do this is we don't use a single compute instance for the computation. We do the computation using multiple compute instances. The crypto technique is called multi-party compute. So think of it as multiple computers getting together and doing a computation without any single one of them having the encrypted data and the key. So it's sort of a separation of duty. Another way of looking at it is like a multi-factor authentication where compromising one single compute instance or even a subset of compute instances will not yield the data. You'd have to compromise all of those compute instances.
So kind of, I know you said you kind of started specifically focusing on that particular area in 2015. So have you seen, you know, adoption of the technology or maybe technology isn't the right way to phrase it, but the process that you were just describing and kind of how widespread is that?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, you know, this was pre-GDPR, right? Forget about CCPA. This was pre-GDPR. This was very, very early days, but the awareness was there. In fact, very specifically, Intel was developing a technology called software guard extensions. And that required specific hardware support to be able to go do this. We embarked on a way of doing it without depending on any specific hardware or operating system or instruction set. Although there's definitely ways we can utilize this new technology as well as it gets into the mainstream, it's still very early. But what we are seeing is because of privacy regulations, the need for privacy-enhanced computation is front and center now. In fact, you know, it's public information. Gartner has just announced their top 10 trends to track for 2021, and this happens to be number three. So it's front and center. The market has evolved. Customers are much, much more knowledgeable about this capability. In early days, when we used to talk to customers, they would say, no, can be done. This is snake oil. So we had to prove it to them.
Yeah, and I think you're kind of implicit in what you're just saying is, you know, by predating some of the new privacy schemes, or at least having the initial development predate, you're ready to kind of capitalize on the new market being created as things like GDPR and more recently CCPA start forcing organizations to change.
Absolutely. So one of I think the most gratifying things about this is if you think about privacy, you know, privacy is personal. Privacy is very close to everybody because it's your personal data. While security, which is something that has been around forever, is always viewed as a necessary evil to meet certain compliance requirements. So the big breakthrough, I think, is that when things like, you know, early this year, when CCPA came into effect and the California regulation was now enacted into law, all the companies doing business with California residents started sending these notices out. Interestingly, security officers or security practitioners actually got those notices and said, oh my God, this is real now. We have to get serious about this and protect our customers' privacy. And that's where privacy became a competitive differentiator. If I'm selling a service and I'm taking care of my customers' privacy, I can use that as a differentiator versus the security aspect of it, which is I'm going to check some boxes and make sure that I'm meeting all the requirements so that if I get breached, you know, I can just say, look, I did everything I could and, you know, there is nothing I could have done better. So that's where this is a game changer. You know, it really is something that is very close to what security practitioners are starting to believe.
And if I'm hearing correctly, it seems like, as you said, the regulations and the new laws, as you said, are driving a different perception and forcing people to come at the issues from a different angle. Because it sounds like, you know, even without the regulations, if you talk to people who are truly concerned about privacy or truly concerned about security, they would have pushed for probably a lot of these measures to be voluntarily implemented. But now that you have this outside force, it kind of helps with the internal sell from an investment standpoint.
Exactly. The fact that it has teeth, GDPR started this, right? Because now there's some real teeth in these regulations that you have to actually be, you know, be liable and you have to pay some real money. That really gives it a lot more teeth. These privacy and security regulations have been around for a long time, right? You're in the healthcare business, HIPAA has been there for a long time, so has PCI. But from the perspective of actually protecting data, they seem to always find the lowest common denominator from a technology perspective. Let's do what everybody is able to do. Privacy regulations actually start on the other end, which is I'm going to protect data no matter what. So that's actually spurring a lot more innovation in the technology industry as well, which again is very, very different.
Yeah, actually, that's a very interesting take on it. As you said, if the newer privacy regulations, instead of, as you said, are not going to the lowest common denominator, but going to the ideal, you know, how are you seeing that specifically drive innovation and kind of the change in the marketplace?
Yeah, so it first actually starts out with the identification of personal information. One of the things that privacy regulations do is they don't necessarily specify how the data is protected. They identify what data is to be protected, and then they assess what the value of that data is in terms of how much they will fine you if you were to lose it. So first, data collectors have to now figure out how to identify sensitive data. And it's not very straightforward. It's not like saying it's just Social Security information. There's things like genetic data, There's things like addresses, names. I mean, these are very, very generic from a data type perspective, right? As you look at the data, you can't really figure out whether it's sensitive information or not. So it's spurring the need to do contextual search to mine your data repository to see what data is sensitive. That's fairly new in terms of how it can be done. And then this whole concept of you have to specify use for that data. You cannot just collect data for the sake of it. You have to specify the use for it. So then that figures, you know, that make sure that the chief data officers now have to figure out how to actually process that data. And that's where these data processing capabilities, where they don't expose the underlying records, is starting to gain steam.
Yeah, and kind of as you were just saying, by focusing on a really broad swath of data, because, you know, having looked at some of the definitions, it's, you know, at times it can feel like it's almost including all bits of data about an individual. And then, as you said, starting from that premise and then having to identify specific uses as for why you want to collect the data, it's kind of flipping on its head what had been kind of the established business model from a digital perspective, which was, we're just going to get everything we possibly can get our hands on, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do with it later. Now it's, you know, trying to narrow that scope and, you know, kind of drive a lot more deliberate consideration around design.
Yeah, and again, you know, healthcare has actually been fairly stringent in terms of enacting regulations, which has driven the adoption of information technology, right? That's what HIPAA is, and that's what HITECH is building on top of that. It wasn't necessarily for privacy. It was from the provider's perspective to make sure that they were all digitalized and the fact that information could be transferred very easily. Well, you've just created a massive vulnerability. You know, one of the things my investor always talks about is, you know, data is the new oil, but in a lot of cases, data is actually the new asbestos as well. When you're sitting on the data, you have exposure. And that is where building a policy framework or a mechanism by which you can protect the data that is sensitive while not destroying its utility is the real path forward.
And kind of framing and describing the key question in that manner, the key issue in that manner, do you get the sense that people maybe feel overwhelmed by having to confront that paradigm?
At the beginning, yes. I think regulations, again, in this case, regulation is way far ahead of the technology in some cases. You know, how do you find every possible piece of data? And if you protect all of that data, how do you actually extract value out of it? So it does sound overwhelming, but that's exactly why we have had some experience with this, right? GDPR has been around for a couple of years now. CCPA went into effect, and then they clarified exactly how they're going to enforce it. And now with CPRA, we're going even a step further, which is establishment of a dedicated authority that will be consistent in terms of how they enforce the regulation versus just the Attorney General doing it. They've specified sensitive data a lot more clearly as well. And they've also specified exactly how the data processors need to make sure that they store the data reliably. Now, again, a lot of it is ambitious and aspirational, but I'm sure that we'll see some of those regulations being tightened up, cleaned up, loosened up, depending on how easy it is to implement them, because they've given a lot of time, right? It's all the way up to January 1st of 2023 when it goes into effect.
For those of you just joining, I'm talking with Amish Devatia from BAFO, and we've been talking about the changing landscape for privacy. And Amish, you're just talking about the newly passed CPRA in California, which, you know, as you said, builds on CCPA. Thinking about privacy in the U.S. kind of broadly, we just referenced, you know, two laws that are California specific. And, you know, as we've been going through the conversation already, you mentioned HIPAA. Do you have any concerns with the states taking these actions that to some degree live within their boundaries, but obviously still end up having kind of cross-country impact without having a more federal privacy, comprehensive privacy scheme?
Absolutely. I think if there isn't a federal privacy scheme of some sort, it'll just lead to mass confusion. I think the states are taking the lead just to show it as an example. And that will spur the need for nationwide regulation. Again, it's not like it doesn't exist. There's a number of different regulations that are being debated, including one that just came out like a month ago, this thing called safe data. So there is a lot of activity there, but having a real regulation that effectively is going to be law is a good way to set the stage as to, well, this is what the expectations are. While I think the regulations would have to be at the federal level just because of the need for homogeneity across the country, I think enforcement will actually be much more local. I think you will have the states enforcing it a lot more compared to having a federal agency to enforce it. That would be a massive task that I'm not sure the federal government would want to do.
And I definitely agree with you that I think having a federal privacy scheme makes more sense, because then, you know, everyone will be playing on the same playing field, as opposed to, you know, potentially having nuances or even major distinctions from state to state. You know, so if we're able to get something on the federal level, do you think it'll kind of mirror GDPR or CCPA, or do you think it could potentially go in a completely different direction?
No, I think GDPR is a great example of how to do this at a large, you know, in that case, EU level. So I think it's a good blueprint to go do that. One of the biggest issues with privacy regulation is, you know, it just cannot be location specific because it is not related to where a company is headquartered. It is really about the people, and people move around. I mean, the reason CCPA became such a big deal is that every company suddenly had to be CCPA compliant because they had residents who were California residents. And actually, GDPR set the stage for that as well. So there's no question that it has to be done at the federal level. And I think the efforts are already underway in a lot of cases.
You know, just also kind of thinking about the approach that the U.S. can take to different concepts at times, in thinking about, you know, embedded and entrenched kind of personal freedom and personal autonomy perspective. You know, would you have any concerns that could undermine or undercut any ideal aspects that arguably should be included in a federal privacy scheme?
Well, it will spur more of a need to make sure that personal freedom is guaranteed. I mean, GDPR has this concept of right to be forgotten, which is, I can just go in there and say, give me all my data and delete it. Now that itself can be a vulnerability, because if somebody is impersonating me, they will get all of my data. But assuming that all of that is cleaned up and there is a very well-established protocol to do that, in fact, it enhances personal freedom because you can choose to not be known by anybody out there, especially if it's social networks that you're concerned about, then it gives you the mechanism to actually make that happen.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point that, as you said, it can arguably enhance that personal freedom. But, you know, kind of turning into that right to be forgotten or right to deletion, you know, kind of what's your perspective on including that within privacy regulations?
I think it is a critical part of privacy regulations because, like I said, data collection is a default. You know, you don't even know what you're clicking when you're going into these websites or using an app where you agree to all kinds of things. They will collect data because in a lot of cases, you don't pay for that service. So it's got to be paid for somehow. But that doesn't mean that they can use the data without any controls. So a good mechanism is to be able to share data, but be able to control where that data goes. Again, it is not easy from a personal interface perspective to control all of this, but that's where innovation comes in. I think we will have much better what is known as privacy UX, the privacy user experience, where it shouldn't feel like somebody's stealing my data and that's the end of it. It should feel like I'm giving just enough data so that I can derive benefit from it. We all benefit from the fact that you're sharing data. It's not like we're always getting hurt, but there's a balance.
And in kind of teasing out that balance, do different industries require a different set with, you know, on the scale of where that balance could be achieved? Because, you know, I think kind of taking the example of, you know, as you said, you know, a mobile app that maybe is for entertainment purposes, and it's asking, oh, I want to get all your contacts and have all your location data. You look at that and go, well, why do you really need that if all I'm doing is playing like a word game, for example, compared to, a healthcare company, whether it be a hospital where you're connecting to or some other care delivery organization where arguably it is more justified for it to have and maybe retain that data as opposed to, having to purge its databases. So is there room for that level of distinction within a scheme?
I think there is. And this is where actually it all comes together, right? I think PCI and HIPAA and other industry-specific regulations have to keep evolving as well. They have to see what privacy regulations are doing, and they have to adapt some of those capabilities in their regulations as they move forward, right? Nothing is static. So they have to do that. Again, healthcare, I would think, is actually the most sensitive personal information. Financial information, at the end of the day, it's about money. Healthcare is about you as a person and your life. So healthcare is actually likely to be even more stringent than anything else. And there's a lot of confusion out there. I'm sure in some cases, CCPA doesn't apply to them because they're nonprofits in some cases. Well, CPRA fixed that. CPRA is trying to say, well, it's not just the organization that collects that data. It's everybody that they use it as third parties as well. So it expands the scope of it. So I think it will definitely evolve based on sector-specific requirements. But at the end of the day, it would be great if the industry regulations match up with the privacy regulations so that from a data collector's perspective, it makes it a lot easier to figure what to collect, what to protect, and what to process.
Yeah, no, I think as you're saying, it's there is room for that industry individualization. But at the same time, if you're starting from a common baseline, then you can, no matter how someone's interacting with an industry, it knows, okay, here's where the starting point is. And then maybe you're going to be able to see some variation driven by specific need or specific use cases.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that is the part of this evolution of regulations as we see it in the next few years.
It also seems like it kind of loops back around to what you were saying earlier, which is by having these newer regulations and newer laws going to the place of let's protect all data and make you justify why you need to use the data in such a way, which in turn, as you said, drives innovation. If you have better technology that's not just trying to hit the lowest common denominator, but trying to hit the highest level that you possibly can, that would also seem to make this transition and refinement a lot easier.
Yes. Yeah, so actually, one of the biggest factors that is influencing this is the data collectors or the organizations that provide healthcare, for example, or financial services are actually outsourcing their infrastructure. And this is probably the worst possible time to do that because now you don't have control over your data at all. It's in the cloud service provider's control. And the cloud service provider is very smart to say, it's not my problem, if the data is lost, because it's most likely it's your fault, right? Misconfigurations are 2/3 of problems that are discovered for breaches. So, but I think the flip side of that is the infrastructure is getting much more homogenized, right? If everybody is in these cloud service providers, if you enact policies and technologies to protect data as it migrates to cloud, and it happens automatically, you have a much better chance of actually meeting these requirements rather than doing these one-off projects, which can be very expensive to protect sensitive data, varying by which environment you're in.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that also goes into a kind of a common theme that I end up talking about with a lot of people, which is, it's really instilling a culture of privacy as opposed to, just trying to fit it in and justify an ROI or some other justification, but, really make it a part of everything that you're doing and having everyone buying into that.
Yeah, we like to refer to that as building trust. There is a trust that has to be built up between the consumer and the provider in all industries, irrespective of what sector you're in. And privacy is a very, very good way of building that trust. So you will share your data, you have to share your data, but whoever is collecting the data is not going to misappropriate it. And their approach to how that data is processed is actually going to be a competitive differentiator, right? How they handle that data is going to make them look better than their competitors.
Yes, no, I think you're right. Because if you can get people comfortable with sharing their data with you because they know it's, you know, you're only asking for what needs to be asked for and you're going to be using it in a clearly identified way, then there's less of a chance of data being withheld because you think it's going to be misappropriated or misused.
Exactly. Again, you know, collect the data, but be responsible.
Yeah. So believe it or not, we're already almost at the end of our time. So what I'd like to do is ask one final question, which, you know, kind of based off of everything that we've discussed, what's your prediction in terms of what could happen from a privacy regulation or legislation perspective over the coming year in the U.S.?
I think we are definitely going to see a federal privacy mandate, regulation that will follow from the mandate. It will include a very clear definition of what constitutes a breach. You know, we've had breach notification laws in the U.S. For a number of years. All 50 states have them. But there's lots of loopholes in there. You know, 43 of them don't require the collector to actually disclose it if the breach did not cause any harm. Well, those days are gone. Now it's going to be much, much more stringent in terms of being open about breaches. So I think that's going to be an important part of this. I think the definition of sensitive data will be enforced and created much more at a sector level because healthcare has a different definition of privacy versus or private data versus financial services. But that will also be something that will evolve. And I think there will be a regulatory authority that will come with all of this as well, whether centralized or distributed, my vote is distributed, which will actually enforce this. That's my prediction as far as you know, these privacy regulations and regulations in general concerning data are concerned.
Yeah, certainly a multiple aspects to keep an eye on, and you know, hopefully, you know, there will be a lot of work that goes into it, and we're able to see a lot of that over the coming year or years plus. But you know, kind of as I mentioned, believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest Amish Davadia for a great conversation today.
Thank you, Matt. It was a pleasure.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.